This podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest, and safest way to bet on all things sports. With March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Opening Day right around the corner, Bet Online has all the latest news, scores, and odds to help you win big. The best part? You'll receive 50% off welcome bonus with your first deposit. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your literal free money. Plus, signing up is a great way to support the podcast you're listening to in your ears right now. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Blue Wire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 18 of That's What Bea Said. I'm one of your hosts at Breezy Clee, also known as Bree Russ, that's my name. And I'm joined by my fellow co-host. I've got Miss Mollis over here, Brittany Mollis at Bird's Eye View. Brittany, how you doing?
Great, Bree. I missed you last week.
I missed you guys, too. I'm ready. I'm back to throw you guys some alley-oops.
Yeah.
And guide this episode. Meredith is also joining us, Meredith Kane at MK on Sports. Meredith, hello.
So nice to have you back.
I'm happy to be back, you guys. We've got a jam-packed show tonight. A lot of things to get into. There were some carryover topics that you ladies covered last week that I'm excited I get to be here for. Mm-hmm. We're going to dive into some civil war amongst our fan bases, a little bit of Cavs talk because Miss Mollis was at the game last night and the Cavs won. So we got to get into that a little bit. And then we are going to dive into quite a few Browns topics here, get into some combine chat. We have our own little competition, and then we're going to wrap it up with some more Ask Me Anythings.
I like how you say we have our own little competition.
We do. We have our own That's What Bea Said combine. We might add to it depending on how this goes. We might make it to the second round.
Yes, let's do it.
We'll see how the scouts like our numbers.
Oh, they're gonna like our numbers. They're gonna be real impressed with our numbers.
That's right. We won't spoil it. You're gonna have to listen. All right, guys. So last week, you guys were starting to talk about in some Ask Me Anything. Someone had asked about the three fan bases and what we call the Cleveland Civil War. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna try to talk about our thoughts on the fan bases, and Meredith being more of an outsider to all of this, want to get her perspective as well, because is this just a Cleveland thing or does this actually happen outside of Cleveland? So Brittany, I know you have a very strong opinion on this, so I'm going to let you lead on this and I'll pipe in.
It's shocking that I would have a strong opinion on anything, really.
That's why we have a podcast.
Wow, amazing. Okay. So when somebody asked me this question, I was like, this is exactly what we need to talk about, because it's been something that's been bugging me for years. There's very clearly like personalities of the fan bases, right? So you have the Browns and we all kind of feel like, you know, family at most of the time, you know, we're not, but even when we like fight about things, like we still get along. Like I would still defend even the worst of Browns Twitter, okay? And then you have the Cavs, who, you know, after LeBron left, a lot of them sort of got quieter. But, you know, when LeBron was here, they were very, they're a very dramatic bunch of people. I remember that specifically. And then you have the Indians. Let me be very clear. The Indians are the reason, the Indians fans are the reason why this civil war exists. Do you agree with this?
I actually do agree with that.
Thank you.
You kind of elaborated on it a little bit, and I think the Civil War part comes out. It's almost like, who is the most dysfunctional sometimes? In terms of like, oh, the Browns do something stupid or something happens, and it's like Indians fans are mad at Browns fans for complaining about something. I mean, it is like the most bizarre thing that I've ever seen happen, and I'm trying to think of like an actual example of this, but it's like it's a huge competition
all the time,
sometimes amongst ineptitude
all the time. And you know, the franchises, they take their turns on being the most dysfunctional on like a weekly basis too. It's not like, you know, a yearly
thing. Saw that happen.
Yeah, it's like every week somebody, you know, Dan Gilbert's being an idiot, Jimmy Haslam can't keep his nose out of anything, and Dolan, ew, girl, I don't even talk about him. But like, I think the whole reason that this even exists is because, and I have a theory, and like, you know, there's no evidence to support it, but this is what I think. So, you know, in the 90s, the Indians were like super popular. You know, they got Jacobs Field, and they had all these names and, you know, big hitter, Manny Ramirez and Jim Thome and Albert Bell. Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just, it was a great time to be an Indian.
Went to the World Series a couple times.
Yes. 95 and 97. It was a good time. Good time for us. And we had all those sellouts. And we had, you know, they cultivated a very strong, passionate following. Then the Browns, they disappeared for a while. Yes. And I think, like, we as a city got so attached to the Cleveland Indians. And, you know, rightfully so, because they were so exciting to watch for such a long time. But then the Browns came back. And let's be very clear about something, everyone. Cleveland is and always will be a football town first. And it's not a slight on, you know, the Indians or the Cavs or anything, but that's just the way it is, right?
Yes.
Okay, so when the Browns came back, all that passion that people had for the Indians sort of went back to its original owner, which is the Cleveland Browns. I'm not saying that you, like, I genuinely like all teams, all three of them, in their different, you know, ways. People think I don't like the Indians, but to be very honest, I spend more time at Progressive Field than I do at the other two, and it's not even close, because it's just fun to be there. I love baseball. I did love baseball.
I was like, did something change after a week?
Sure, no, she's going to love it again. I'm working my magic.
So like the game of baseball, I love it. I don't like Major League Baseball as much as I used to, obviously. I don't like Cleveland Indians as much as I used to. But, you know, baseball, that's a love that's never going to completely die for me, because it's so ingrained in who I am and why, you know, I started talking about sports. But, yeah, so I think now that the Browns have been back, everything else takes a back seat to them. And if you're, like, if the Browns are your number one team, you're like, oh, yeah, this great. Makes a lot of sense. I'm all for it. The Indians fans have developed this like an inferior feeling. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
like attitude. Complex.
Yes. So that's my theory. I think it all started in the 90s, you know, when everything was great with the Indians, and then the Browns came back and sort of ruined it. And I just want to say, why can't we all just get along? Like, it's all the same city. We all love the same teams. Why can't we just stop fighting, guys?
Yeah, and I think it was apparent. Do you remember when? This is like 4 years ago, but I'm acting like it was ages ago.
Yeah, I'm waiting for someone in the 80s.
The Cavs were really good, and we won the championship. That was in 2015-16 was kind of when that started. Mm-hmm. The Indians went to the World Series in 16. Mm-hmm. The Browns were... We're not going to talk about them, but... they didn't exist.
1-31. Hugh Jackson driving the bus,
I'm
baby.
Sorry. But the Indians and the Cavs were like crossing over from a season standpoint in that like early fall time period when Indians were playing fall baseball. The Cavs were kicking off their season. There was a moment in time too where the Cavs were getting their championship ring during the home opener. The Indians were playing playoff baseball. Like mm-hmm. The atmosphere was amazing. If the Browns would have been good at that same time period.
Oh my gosh.
I can't even imagine what the city would have been like, because it was already electric. Yes. But it was almost as if there was this competition of like, oh, well, who's actually at the Indians playoff game, and anybody that's at the Cavs game for the home opener. Like, it was just like this huge competition of you had to show your loyalty and who your loyalty laid with, whatever. And like, I just didn't understand. I'm like, why can't we just be happy that we actually have two very relevant teams?
That's it. Like, why does it always have to be like a fight? You know, I don't understand why there has to be this anger. And I say this, it only seems to concentrate from one specific fan base. I don't see, you know, like Browns fans, we're so lost in our own little weird dramatic world that we don't notice most of the other things most of the time. Cavs fans, I don't even know what to say about Cavs fans anymore. Like, they're a lot quieter.
Are
they
still fans?
Right? Like, they don't have that passion that they once did, but like, you know, I still love them and they're great. But you know, I feel like it's the Indians fans who nitpick at everything.
And yeah, and I'm just going to say this. Because I also like watching the Indians, but I would say I'm probably more of a casual Indians watcher, or I guess follower is maybe the better word for that. Mm-hmm. Because I do watch them, but I'm not constantly eating up content from the Indians. I'm not researching as much as I am for the Browns or even the Cavs. And for whatever reason, I just find it a little bit less entertaining or enjoyable from my perspective. So I would say, knowing that, I feel like I'm not welcome into that tribe circle as much as the ones are that are constantly following all the content, reading all the articles that are put out, interviews, post-game interviews. Like, that to me, it's number one, there's a lot of games in an entire baseball
season.
Hard. It's really hard to follow along with that. The Browns, it's easy to consume that content because it's a 16-game season. The offseason's much longer. You can kind of keep up with it in a much easier manner. The Cavs, it's a little bit harder to keep up with because of the amount of games as well. But I do feel like it's easier to consume that level of content.
Yeah. And one more thing that I want to add on, you know, we talk about the ownership a lot of all three teams and how, like, dysfunctional they are. I think the Indians, where they lose me every time is, you know, when you look at Dan Gilbert and the Cavs, he does a lot wrong. There's no doubt about that. You know, the Haslams, they do a lot wrong. There's no doubt about that. But never once since these two have been the owners have I ever felt like they've blamed the fans for anything. It's never like, well, you know, if, you know, the Dolans, for example, you know, Paul Dolan just received that award not too long ago at the Cleveland Sports Award. And he went out of his way to thank the fans who buy the suites. Okay? This is a problem. The Indians have created this culture, this disconnect with the fans. And that's where they lose me. And that's why, you know, when I talk about why I don't love the Indians the way I used to, that plays a giant part in why. Because it's not about... I applaud them for being able to, you know, stay competitive year after year. That's great. But these are your customers, okay? You have to find ways to get them engaged, to be friendly with them, to make them want to come support you. I think more than anything, the Dolans fail at that every single time.
Meredith, was it like this in DC?
So it's really interesting because, for one thing, Ted Leonsis is the owner of both the Wizards, the Mystics, and the Capitals. So you've got, like, one owner of two of the four major sports. And then there was a point where I would say the hockey fans, the Capitals fans, were very... I kind of want to say snobby, but I was, like, in that group, so I don't want to call myself a snob. But there was this very... like, if you don't understand our sport, you're not a real fan. Like, it was a very much like, you need to live, eat, breathe hockey all the time. Otherwise, you're not a real fan. And I guess because at one point, the Capitals were the only good team in DC. And so I think a lot of the longtime fans that had been following the team would get kind of irritated at the other quote unquote bandwagon fans of, like, okay, you don't have anybody else to cheer for. So you're just hopping on hockey, but you don't understand the game, which, by the way, absolutely ridiculous and stupid take. So there was a little bit of that for a while, but there wasn't really a lot of, like, headbutting amongst the different fan bases. Like, there were people who were definitely one sport over the other, and it's, I wouldn't call it a Redskins town, but most towns, most cities that have an NFL team, that's, like, the number one. Like, even when I lived in Nashville, the Titans never won, the Predators always won, it was still Titans town. But I think when it really started to end was when the players, they started to support each other. So in the Capitals' run for the Stanley Cup in 2018, Nats players were at the game. They were in the locker room. They were constantly supporting them. And then in the same vein, last year when the Washington Nationals were going for the World Series, you could see, like, Ovechkin was throwing out the first pitch, like, John Carlson was in the stands. Like, when the athletes of each team supports each other and does it very visibly, I think the fan bases kind of follow suit. And I don't know if I've really seen a lot of that in Cleveland. Like, I think there was one Browns game last year where I saw Larry Nance Jr., but, you know, I saw him around, like, the basement. Like, he wasn't anywhere where anyone but reporters and players would see him. So it wasn't really well known that Larry Nance and Larry Nance Jr. had gone to the game. So it's a very weird dynamic when you have the sports athletes that actually very overtly support each other, and then, like, even the Twitter accounts would be tweeting at each other, the Capitals and the Nationals Twitter accounts. Like, it was like a big family atmosphere. And granted, the Redskins are left by the wayside because everybody hates Dan Snyder and everything that he stands for, but they still want, I wouldn't say they necessarily want success for Dan Snyder, but they want success for the Redskins and the Wizards because they want them to be a part of that as well. So that kind of leads me to my theory with the Cleveland fans, is that every fan base in this town has suffered in some way, shape, or form. Like, Cavs fans have suffered their heartbreak with LeBron leaving multiple times and losing to the Warriors in the finals straight years in a row. You know, the Indians with losing Game 7 in the World Series, and just, you know, all the drama surrounding Francisco Lindor, the Browns just being bad. So, you know, every fan base has suffered in its own unique way. And I almost feel like the fan bases themselves feel like when you talk about, like, your suffering as a Browns fan, that's going to diminish my suffering as an Indians fan. So, like, for example, like, say I stub my toe and Brittany bumps her head and Bree jams her finger. Like, we're all hurting, but we all hurt different ways. So if I say, ouch, I stub my toe, and then Brittany says, but wait, what about me? I hit my head. And then Bree says, but what about me? I stubbed my finger. Like, that's what it feels like to me with the different fan bases in Cleveland, where, like, everyone is hurting in a different way. And the minute someone talks about how they've suffered as a fan base, the other fan bases come back and say, well, no, we've suffered more. Stop diminishing our suffering. So that's kind of the theory that I had from, you know, from only being here for a few years and being in this city for the past 3 years. That's kind of the impression that I get that has kind of, like, caused this civil war amongst the fan bases, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You know what I think?
I think you nailed it.
I feel like it's just a classic case of baseball fans being weird.
That's it. Yes.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, baseball fans are really weird. Like, there's no denying that at all.
Yeah. They're, like, the kind of nerds that I don't like. Because they're, like, they're the kind of nerds who, like, talk down to you. They get off at talking down
they're
to
intimidating.
You.
They're intimidating.
They're, like, condescending nerds. Like, yes. So you're saying they're, like, the type of nerds that are the smartest people in the room and they realize it and they want to make sure that everyone knows that they're the smartest person
in the
room?
Yeah, but they're the smartest thing that nobody cares about. That's the problem. Like, if it were something interesting, I'd be like, hey, talk to me. I want to know everything about... But I don't care about these things. Oh, so, you know, when I fire off a baseball tweet, which, I mean, I never do, but, like, once in a while I will, and I'll have, like, 20 Indians fans in my mentions telling me how wrong I am. And it's just like, dude, this is Twitter. Okay, like, get a life. You're lecturing me about something that I literally don't care about. So that's... Baseball fans are weird.
Yeah. Well, and you're allowed to have an opinion even if you're not a diehard Indians fan.
No, you're not, Meredith. No. That's the thing.
Okay. Oh, excuse me. That's wrong, Meredith.
That's the problem.
Yeah. You know what else is weird, you guys?
Tell me.
The Cavs won last night. So we have to talk about it because the Cavs have won 3 out of the last 4 games.
Yeah, they have.
They went into overtime against a good Miami Heat team last night. Brittany actually happened to be there at the game watching her boo, Colin.
Wow.
My guy, Kevin Porter Jr., went off last night.
And yeah, why don't you tell him the text that you sent our group message this morning?
You know what? I kind of blacked out. I don't even remember what I said in the group text. Can you remind me? I was like...
I woke up this morning
to what time was this? Was it like 5:30 in the morning? Oh,
it might have been. I have to find it now because I was like, Brie, do you have to hit me with this at like 8 o'clock in the morning? Like, I just woke up.
You're right. It was aggressive.
Let's see. We talked a lot today.
Yeah, we got some photos in here that we're gonna get
to. The photos. I can't wait to tweet the photos. Okay, this is what happened. It's 6:13 in the morning. This is what Brie sends me.
Coming in hot.
Me. Also, I like KPJ so much better than Colin, and I'm so happy he went off last night. Sorry, Britt.
I know. You know what I was doing when I sent that text?
What?
I was actually running on the treadmill, and I had a thought, and I, like, stopped, sent that text message to you, and, like, got back on the treadmill.
You were like, I'm going to hurt Britney's feelings at 6:15.
That's amazing.
Okay, so I will also just say that I only watched the first half, so I didn't even get to see, like, the good part of the game because I was doing my other podcast. Mm-hmm. So I actually missed the entire second half of Kevin Porter Jr. going off. But I formed this opinion in my head a long time ago, and now that he finally, like, executed, because he's kind of had a little bit of a slump heading mm-hmm. into All-Star break, I was all in, and I was like, he is the future. The Cavs are going to be good in a couple of years. We're going to go to the playoffs. I was, like, all back in on the Cavs train in a couple of years, and, like, who are we going to draft? Who are we going to round this team out with? Is Kevin Love going to be traded? Like, what's going to happen? So I don't want to slander Colin Sexton. Colin Sexton... He is what he is. I feel like we know who Colin Sexton is now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Kevin Porter Jr. has finally kind of gotten his light. And I want to see more of him. That's all. Like, he's coming off the bench. Let's give him maybe more of these moments. That's all.
No, I absolutely agree with you. One of the things that stuck... I was on the Chase Down pod a couple weeks ago with Justin and Carter. One of the things that Carter said that really, like, stuck with me, and it makes a lot of sense, is that... when Colin Sexton is bad, he's bad very loudly.
Yes.
So, you know, as Cavs fans, we sort of tend to get really excited about, you know, specific people doing well and get really down on specific people not doing well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, with Kevin Porter Jr., I was so happy that they drafted him. I am a big fan of his. And, you know, if he's the future, I'm all 100% on board with it. Everyone thinks that, you know, I'm Colin Sexton fan. I'm a Cavs fan first, 100%. So anything that they do, I just want them to, I don't want fans to get too excited on Kevin Porter just yet, only because he's going to hit some rough patches too. And like I said, I feel like we get very excited and very down on people. Like, again, that's Cavs fans being a little dramatic, and it's a roller coaster. I get that. So, you know, just wait and see. I'm not saying that Colin Sexton's better than Kevin. I'm not saying either one of them is better than each other. I cheer for them both in their own ways. I was super excited to see him really shine last night. I think, you know, we've been waiting for that game specifically. I'm glad that we got it, and, you know, I hope for the best. I really like him a lot.
You know, the other positive, I think, from all of this, obviously with Beeline not working out and just the weird things that went on at the beginning of the season with all the reports that came out and players not liking him and him being more of a college coach, which in all fairness, he was a college coach. So mm-hmm. that just didn't translate to the NBA right. players and the guys on the team. Fine. It didn't work out. But it actually felt like the veterans on the team, the Tristan, Kevin Love, like, they were actually supportive of their young players. And I feel like at the beginning of the season, that wasn't necessarily the case. They were almost mm-hmm. like annoyed.
Yeah.
And there was this, like, divide within for the sure. locker room, and not like a divide in the sense of they hated each other, but, like, just not meshing.
Right.
And it feels like they are more of a team now, regardless of winning and losing.
Yeah, I think that's because there were so many uncertainties, like, about the futures of, like, Tristan and Kevin Love specifically. You didn't know whether they were going to be here. You didn't know exactly how well or not well they were meshing with Beeline's, you know, fundamentals and all the college games. We had no idea how bad it is or it was. I think now we're starting to get bits and pieces of that fed to us, and, you know, we're like, okay, it wasn't a good fit, and that's fine. But now that, you know, Kevin Love is here, and I think they're going to have a hard time getting rid of him, like, even in the off season. Tristan, I would love if they signed him to another contract, but I don't think that that's what he wants. So, you know, but they both have to ride out the end of this season, and they know that now. So I think... now that Beeline's out, they're going to try to make the best of it. And you're seeing it. They look like they're enjoying each other very much. And that's awesome to see.
I agree. I actually have nothing else to say about the Cavs, unless Brittany, anything else from being at the game in person? It was a Monday night, so how many people were actually in attendance?
You know, for a Monday night in February, it didn't look that bad. This is my first game this year, okay? And I went to maybe one or a couple last year. I don't know. My memory's foggy. I think I have dementia. But I really do. That's not... I shouldn't laugh about that, but I kind of do. But no, like, attendance isn't great. But there was a surprise. It looked like a pretty good crowd for a Monday night in February. Also, this was my first time going since the renovations. And have you two seen them?
I haven't.
Oh, my God. Meredith, have you?
No, which is kind of... Yeah, it's really bad. I haven't been to a Cavs game since LeBron was here.
Oh my gosh. Well, let me tell you, we should like plan something and go, because it is just, it's stunning what they did. Honestly, like, I was blown away at how beautiful everything looks in there. So kudos to them for that. Very impressive stuff.
I mean, the outside looks nice. I see the outside of it every day on my way to and from work.
Yeah, but... with the skyline's pretty.
Yeah, so I'd like to see the inside of it.
Yeah, go Dan Gilbert. I stand Dan.
Oh, I stand Dan. Well,
it's the next t-shirt.
Yeah, that'll sell one to me.
Just to Brittany. Oh, man. Well, we got to get into our third team of the evening, and that is the Browns. And
is this the team that hit their head?
Here we go.
Well, as always, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it seems like every single week... I don't know. Every single week there is something to report out on, which is good for us. Maybe not.
We were worried that like it was going to be boring in the off season. Remember that? When we're like, oh gosh, what will we talk about?
Is it ever boring in the off season though?
No.
True. I mean, this is my third off season with the Browns, and there's never any shortage of storylines.
Well, we got some more, you guys. But we're going to kick off with the good, because our new GM, Andrew Berry, actually was featured on the Today Show this morning for Black History Month. And they did a segment because he is the youngest GM in the NFL. And he is one of two Black GMs in the NFL. And they did a really nice, like, 5-minute interview on Andrew Berry. He discussed a lot of stuff. They talked about... when he found out he got the job, he touched on the 0-16 season and the record, and what his place was in that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really good quotes and takeaways. I couldn't even believe how well spoken he was. I guess I shouldn't be surprised by that, but I was blown away.
He's the kind of nerd that I want to listen to all day. Like, I would hear, if he wanted to talk to me about baseball, I would sit in a chair, I'd pull up a chair and be like, go, Andrew.
I'm sure
tell
he
me
would.
Everything you know.
I mean, I'm sure he would. He would probably love the nerdy side of baseball.
Tell them what Mary Kay said about him today, Meredith.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So Mary Kay on Cleveland Sports Radio today called Andrew Berry a football guy.
Ooh. Did that set off a lot of alarms for the real football guys?
So here was the point that she was making. You know, she had said that the biggest thing that the Sashi Brown era was missing was a football guy. And at the time, you know, Andrew Berry was VP of player personnel. So I think that has more to do with drafting and talent scouting. And he was very green, but then he goes out and he gets experience at other teams, especially with the Eagles. And then he comes back, and to Mary Kay, to her, that was him learning how to be a football guy. He went to other football teams, learned their systems, learned how to, you know, scout players and learn how to run a front office. And then he comes back, and now with that experience, she considers him a football guy. I mean, she also said that we may not know that, you know, we're going to find out this season if that's enough experience. But at this point, I think her exact quote was, the Browns need a football guy, and that guy is Andrew Berry.
Yeah, yes. Let's not forget, he played football in college.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in high school.
Yes. And he majored in economics. And there's something else, but I literally took one economics class in college at Ohio State, and I wanted to rip my eyes out.
Right. Yeah. I can't imagine.
Like majoring in that subject. No, thank you. No, thank you.
And I bring up high school just because Bel Air, Maryland is a suburb of D.C. So hometown boy for me. Hey.
Yeah. I really
liked how when they asked him about the 0-16 season, he didn't make any he didn't dance around the subject.
Yeah.
He didn't make any excuses. He explained what their strategy was, which was, you know, piling up on assets and draft picks and trying to build a foundation that would work in the long run. So it wasn't about, you know, short-term success. And I think that's something that a lot of fans, even to this day, really, they're not grasping it still. So, but after he said that, he was like, you know, but I understand that at the end of the day, it's all about wins. And, you know, the Browns are in a totally different spot now than they were. They're not, it's not the same strategy. It's not the same formula anymore. They have the pieces they need, you know, just gotta, it's not a teardown operation like it was last time he was here. But I really like the way he answered that. I thought he explained it very well. And I hope that the Browns Dales were listening.
Gosh, I don't
know.
They were not listening.
They were not listening to that.
No, they're still at John Dorsey's funeral. Or they were at Swaggers. I don't know. They were at someone's funeral.
Oh, God.
Oh, that was... What was that? I should not have tweeted that picture. I understand wanting to honor Swagger because he was very loyal and he was, you know, very good doggo.
He was a good boy.
He was a good boy.
We can't leave it at that, though, because I have something else to say.
Okay.
Did you guys see the picture with... Okay, like Swagger was in the coffin.
Uh-huh.
But then also Swagger Jr.
Yeah, that's a picture I was talking about.
Yep. Yep. They took it down, right? They eventually took it down.
They did. They did take that one down.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing else to say about that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I get it. Like, if you wanted the funeral to be open casket, that's fine. But that's not for everyone. So if you're going to post pictures on social media, I feel like the casket should have been closed first.
Nobody wants to remember him like that. That's what made me mad. It's like, why?
Yeah, that was such a sad picture. Like, I don't want to remember him that way.
Part of it was sad.
Yeah. Exactly.
The other part was.
Yeah, disturbing. Disturbing.
Sorry.
Anyway.
Sorry about that.
I took us there. I took us there. All because of Dale. It's Dale's fault.
See what the Dales do.
They derail everything.
Well, speaking of Dales, you guys.
Oh, goodness.
This leads me into our next topic, which is really the bad and the ugly that came out today. And I'm sure everybody at this point that's listening has kind of heard the drama that happened yesterday with Tony Grossi and some of his derogatory statements that he made about Baker when he thought he was off of the air, but it turns out he was actually on the air. Got himself into a little bit of trouble today, and turns out he was suspended. And it's obviously not the first time that Tony Grossi and Baker Mayfield, like, they don't have a great history when it comes to liking each other. Mm-hmm. There's history there. Bad blood, whatever you want to call it. So this was going around Brown's Twitter today, and surprisingly enough, it kind of brought out a divide within the fan base again. And for the most part, it has always felt like the Browns fans are tougher when it comes to beat reporters across all of Browns media. Tony Grossi being one of them, but I would say we're hard on all of the reporters. MKC is another one that gets picked on a lot. And people were defending Baker Mayfield. I was one of them. And it was very interesting because there were a lot of people who were not defending Baker Mayfield, saying that he deserved to be called that there's no excuse for the way that he played last year. He's not a good quarterback. He threw too many interceptions. And I was very, very surprised at how quick people were to turn on Baker Mayfield after being the quarterback for 1.5 seasons.
Oh, yeah. And it's not just like, I feel like poor Baker, right? This dude, he can't do anything right anymore. And they say, oh, winning fixes everything. Does it, though? Because he was winning, you know, in his rookie season. And here we are right now. And
I mean that's what you hit the nail on the head right there with right now, because he did not end the season that well.
It wasn't his fault though. I mean, like, you talk about interceptions and how many of those were, you know,
it wasn't his fault, but I think, but I don't think people really, like, I mean, at this point, you know, Freddie Kitchens is just a distant memory. Like, he's just a bad dream that we woke up from and we hardly remember him. But, you know, people remember Baker and the 21 interceptions, and they just remember a lot of the, you know, the misses from OBJ, the overthrows, the just, you know, not reading the field, you know, the way you expect Baker Mayfield to. And I think that's, you know, it's the most recent that they remember. So if this was at the end of the 2018 season, not the end of the 2019 season, it would be a completely different story. I think it would be 100% pro Baker, but because Baker had such a unproductive season in 2019, I think that's what caused people to turn so quickly.
Yeah. I feel like they turned after the first game.
Yeah.
That's when, like, a lot of them started turning, and they're, you know, after the first game, we heard, well, he shouldn't have been making commercials in the offseason.
Yep.
Like, these are the people that are now, you know, turning, they find any opportunity, any slip up, or even if he doesn't slip up. When he did that interview when they were in Miami at the Super Bowl, and he was on, what show was that?
Wasn't Get Up.
Take. Get Up, that was it. And he did a great job. Like, I watched that, and it felt like I was watching somebody who was growing and maturing, and he's finally learning that, you know, you don't have to be this brash personality all the time. I thought he carried himself really well on that, and even after that, there were people that were like, oh, he's so unprofessional. He, you know, the thing with Rex Ryan and the foot, and it got so blown out of proportion. I think there is a section of this fan base who just wants him to fail no matter what. And what, just so they can say that they were right, because, you know, clearly that's the most important thing to anyone ever. It's just being right.
And I think that's part of what rubs me the wrong way, because there are even people in the media who haven't been a fan of Baker even from the draft, which is fine. Like, you didn't have to want Baker Mayfield in the draft. Mm-hmm. Totally fine. Everybody is entitled to their opinion. But the reality is, he is our quarterback. And in order for the Browns to be successful, we have to want Baker to succeed. So at this point, it feels really counterintuitive to not accept that he is the quarterback. And I think he's on his third offensive coordinator in his, going into his third season. He's on his fourth head coach. Like, that's huge. And we have to acknowledge that that amount of change isn't going to benefit any quarterback in the league. And I think regardless if it was Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Carson Wentz, it doesn't matter. Like, they all would have struggled going through what Baker Mayfield was going through. And to be quite frank, I would rather have Baker Mayfield based on how he works, his work ethic, his attitude, his approach to the game in this position than any other guy. And I'm going to ride with him. And I think with Stefanski and Barry and the new coaching staff, nothing is a given. I understand that. But it can't be worse than last year. It cannot be worse than last year.
Be careful. Be careful. Because people said it couldn't be any worse than the 0-16 season. And then somehow 6-10 was worse than 0-16.
Yeah, for so many other reasons.
I mean, like, yeah, it felt like it was worse. But, you know, for different reasons. But I think, you know, the important, one of the things that stuck out about what happened today was, you know, Rizzo was saying, they were naming off all these quarterbacks that the Browns missed on. And like you said, Bree, there's a group of people that are so stuck on, you know, what we didn't get and what we passed over. And, like, they're obsessed with living in the past and things that they never did really accept Baker Mayfield for being who he is. And that sucks. It's unfortunate. You should want your quarterback to do well. You should, I mean, hello, DeShone Kizer, number one cheerleader right here. He was terrible. But every Sunday I woke up and I'm like, yeah, guys, we're going to win today. Woo, DeShone. Because, you know, that's, you got to rally around what you got. You can't be stuck on the Carson Wentzes and the, you know, the Mahomes. That's not ours. Get over it.
Yeah, I'm with you. And so many other teams passed on some of those same quarterbacks too. I mean, I get it. Like, we want to feel bad for ourselves all the time and understand, like, what could have been. But the reality is, we haven't had a stable organization or coaching staff to build around any team. So now we finally have a roster that we feel good about, I mean, a decent roster. There's a lot of holes that we need to fill and a lot of depth we need to fill. Mm-hmm. Offensive line being one of them, and a very big reason that we need to win there in order to have a successful next year, Baker included. Mm-hmm. But I just think, like, it is what it is. And this is who we have. And I'm going to support Baker Mayfield. And I think what you spoke about earlier, Brittany, he was on Get Up. And I think his mindset and approach was, I don't need to respond to these things anymore because it's not actually helping the team. And it'll be really, really interesting to see if there's anything that comes out of this or if he will just lay low, not respond to it, and move on. Because I do think he learned a lot this past year based on kind of the ups and downs of everything that happened off the field.
Yeah. I would love if Baker Mayfield said nothing at all about this.
Yeah, that would be the absolute smartest thing for him to do. And
100%.
I thought someone had asked him about it. I don't know. Maybe I'm like in the Mandela effect, and this is like in an alternate timeline where someone asked him and he had no comment. But I thought I saw somewhere today that someone asked him and he said no comment. But like I said, maybe I was just like in a different timeline earlier today. But yeah, the smartest thing for Baker to do at this point is to just, you know, keep posting pictures of himself on his Peloton on Instagram.
Yeah. And I think the other thing we just wanted to touch on is, you know, as three individuals that have a podcast, we talk about Cleveland sports, the Browns obviously drives a lot of content for us. It's frustrating when you see things like this happen because there are so many really smart, really good, really talented people doing very similar things to what we're doing. And I think it's frustrating because we would die to have some of these opportunities. And it's not easy to do what we do and to break through that type of platform. And we are just really appreciative of all of the listeners that support us and choosing us to spend an hour with us each week. Mm. It means a lot. And, you know, I think we would all jump at the opportunity to take over if we could.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, I just want to echo what you're saying. I think it's Cleveland is such a special place because there seems to be like this fan base that's just so passionate and knowledgeable, and I feel for those people that are trying to break into this because I know how tough of a job it is. Like, I have a lot of friends that do this, and they're in and out of employment, and they have to, you know, travel to different places when really they would love to stick around in Cleveland and get some full-time job covering these teams. But unfortunately, and maybe not unfortunately, because, you know, we did this and we're having a great time doing this, and it seemed well received. We get a lot of good, positive feedback. You know, I feel bad for people trying to make their way in this industry and they can't. And then you see unfortunate events like today and you're like, man, like I want to hear from the people, the young, talented writers and personalities. I wish they had more airtime. You know, I don't want to step on any toes here, so that's what I'll say about that. But thank you to everyone who listens to us. We really appreciate it.
That's right. All right, we got some fun stuff, you guys. Enough of the Browns drama for the week. I'm sure there'll be more next week we'll get into.
There'll probably be more tomorrow.
That's right. You know there will be.
There'll be more by the time we're done recording this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really.
All right, so it's Combine Week, you guys. And I was laughing because Monday night or Monday during the day, the quarterback got their measurements. And hand season is officially underway. And you guys, we measured our hands.
Joe Burrow and Kyler Murray are Patrick Mahomes are in a club together of small-handed quarterbacks.
That's right. That's right. So this all stems from Joe Burrow's hands only being 9 inches, which apparently is small for a quarterback. And he kind of took to Twitter saying that he was going to probably have to retire from football based on his hand size, which everybody kind of jumped on. And there was a lot of commentary back and forth about, like, how silly is it that he's going to be measured based on his hand size? Like, come on. What are we doing?
Like a half an inch is going to make that big of a difference.
Just kidding.
But no, you're not. Brittany, I have to laugh, though, because in our rundown notes, we had this comment in here, and Brittany wrote, I really like measuring season because because it's the first time as a lady we're not lied to about 9 inches, and I laughed so hard.
Guys, sometimes I'm so funny I like make myself sweat.
Oh, Jerry's listening. Jerry.
I know.
For the record, I tried to get Jerry on the podcast. I told Brittany to go get him, and she tried, and he didn't want to. So
yeah, what had happened was Meredith could hear him listening to South Park in the basement. She's like, is he watching Rick and Morty? I was like, I don't know. I'll tell him to go turn it down.
Jerry.
And then I said he should come on. And then
he said, I'm a prisoner in my own house. That's what he said when I went down there to tell him to turn it down.
Not if he comes on the podcast. Jerry.
That is so dramatic.
We have a segment every week we can set aside.
Yes.
There you go.
Well, guys, so based on the hand measuring, Brittany, Meredith, and I were really curious before we started the show what our hand measurements clocked in at. So Brittany actually put out a poll to see if Twitter could guess who had the largest hand. So Brittany, yes. Do you have initial results?
I have them ready. They're ready to go. We have, hold on, let me refresh it, see if we got any more votes. Okay. 361 votes. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Okay. So at 28%, Meredith.
Okay.
32%, Brie. And 40%, me.
Wow, that's pretty close, actually.
Yeah, I know. I was shocked because, like, you two, okay. Well, I don't want to. You look at the three of us, right? Now, I'm like, obviously, I'm the tallest out of all of us, and it's not even you. I could fit both of you in my pockets. So the fact that people were, I don't know.
So are you,
I
like,
guess it's kind of hard to, like, tell on Twitter, though, like, who's what size, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, because, like, I don't think that, because I think most pictures are usually, like waist up or something like that. You know, there's not a lot of like full body pictures on on social media. They're very like they're selfies or like mirror pictures or something like that. So yeah, it's really difficult to tell how tall a person is from social media unless they're like standing with other, and even then that's difficult.
Yeah,
you know, you could be like hunched over or like standing in a certain way or wearing heels. So yeah, it's always difficult to tell like how tall a person is based on social media.
That is true.
All right, so the results are in.
The results are in.
The measurements are final. Mm-hmm. We have Meredith clocking in at 7 inches.
7 whole inches.
Ooh, Meredith. That's a perfect size.
Followed by myself at 7.5 inches.
7.5 inches.
Woo! Ooh. And Brittany.
She got that extra half inch.
I did. A little stretch.
You told me that half inch don't matter.
You know what? I measured my left hand, you guys. I wonder if my right hand's more flexible. I might have to redo.
I measured my left hand, too.
Yeah, we'll have
I
to
I measured
see.
My left hand, too.
Okay, well.
Okay, so at least, and we're all right hand dominant, right?
Yeah, I feel like we'd be throwing with our right hand.
Yeah.
So we should probably measure our right hand.
Yeah, so we did it wrong.
So we'll do the official results after this, but I know you're all waiting for Brittany's measurements. She is officially clocked in. As Joe Burrow. She's not quite there. You were what, Brittany? 8.5? 8.5.
8.5, yes.
Man, your right hand might be bigger. You might be 9. You might be Joe.
Girl, don't talk to me like that.
Joe better.
So on a scale of 0 to Joe Burrow.
I'm sweating again. I'm sweating too. My hands are sweating.
Every part of me is sweating. So don't feel intimidated, guys. This is not going to help me get a date, by the way. Oh, Brittany has giant man hands. Cool.
Well, you also have, like, super flexible hands, too. Because, like, rare. You said, like, well, because you sent a picture.
Yeah, do we post the pictures after?
We have to post, because we have to let them know that, you know,
they're
we're
accurate.
On to you guys.
Yes, we know what 6 inches looks like.
So, you know, no one's ever lied to me again. Forever. We're out there, and you're like, oh, yeah, 8.5. Dude.
Oh my god.
Do you want to test this?
Yeah, no one's dating you now, Brittany. No one's dating you.
But yeah, like your hands look like they were literally doing the splits.
It's really weird. I don't know what's wrong.
You could palm a football or
I could palm a lot of things. It's amazing that I wasn't a good basketball player. You'd think I'd be able to you know, do something with that.
I mean, it's not the size of the prize, Brittany.
That's right. That's right.
Oh my god. I'm just actually between like the deep voice and these large hands, I don't know, guys. Do we even know? Have you ever seen me? Am I?
Is that a wig? Are you wearing a wig?
I don't think it's a wig because there was one time when we were not sober and I like she was wearing a hat and I like pulled it off and the hair did not come with it. So I'm pretty sure the hair is real.
All right. She's a woman.
Do you want me to prove it? Should I put pictures of that?
A beastly woman. I'm just kidding, Brittany. I love you. I have big hands, too.
You've got that extra half inch.
You do for like.
I mean, I'm 5 foot one. You? Yeah,
you're 5'1" with this.
You're shorter than me.
I should be taller than this based on my hand size.
I just got really excited because I'm always the shortest person in the room. I'm 5'2". Oh. I got an inch on you.
Yeah, I'm shrinking. Ooh.
You're like little tiny people.
I just got like, especially since I'm the only like female at my job, I'm like naturally the shortest. So I just get really excited when I'm no longer the shortest person in the room.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah.
Ladies.
All right. Well, so the hand season measuring actually led me to a question of just thinking about if your employer held a combine for your particular job, what would be a silly reason they wouldn't hire you? And people responded and were like, well, that's what interviews are for. I was like, yeah, I know. Like, but I'm talking
about. It's a joke.
It's a joke. It's like, a joke. Let's have some Twitter. Fun. Boomers. So I just wanted to read a couple of responses because we got a lot of really good ones and they made me laugh out loud today. So I'm going to go ahead and read these off. At Andrew Firedhoff responded with his 5.2 second desk to copier time would not be acceptable. At Brownsland responded the poor slouching ratio that would lead to a poor word per minute typing. Brittany, your dad weighed in the clearing of throat 400 times a day, which I agree, like that is a for sure reason not to get hired.
You don't understand. This is what he does all day.
I'm a constantly. Wait, I'm a throat clearer too sometimes.
Oh my gosh. It drives all of us insane.
he can't even defend himself.
No, he can't.
He could if he came on the podcast.
Oh, okay. We'll continue on. At NEO Sports Wagon, low pop culture IQ, creating social awkwardness, which I appreciate that response too. All right, I like this one. At Cleveland Phil, makes the community coffee too strong.
It's a reason to hire him, man. I like my coffee strong.
At Minus the Q says, eats all the chocolate out of the community candy dish, which that is like me. I go and I raid the candy dishes at work.
I feel that.
And then finally, this one probably was my absolute favorite, and it was actually a reason to hire them. This was from at Cincy Law, and hands down winner. Speaking of hand sizes,
I think this is what started it all.
This is what started it all. I was really impressed. He can actually hit Control Alt Delete with one hand.
Like
game changer.
Crazy.
Mike.
I mean, I have giant hands, guys. It's clear now, and I can't come close.
Yeah, I should like take a picture of my hand on the keyboard. There's a K, an O, a P, a plus sign. All between my thumb and the delete. Like I'm looking at it right now. I'm trying to do Control Alt Delete with one hand. There's like six keys between like where I can reach.
We need at Cincy Law, show us proof.
Yes, Pixar didn't happen.
That's right.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that wraps up our combine. People are asking us if we're gonna do the 40-yard dash, the cone drills. Like we actually might set this up.
Yes.
I think we should.
And record it. So yes, stay tuned.
Absolutely should.
Stay tuned. So hand size, Brittany is the clear winner, unless we measure our right hand and find something different. I'll keep you posted. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Picture's coming. In case you want to ask me on a date. Now you won't.
Wait, does hand size correlate to dateability? Is that like, I mean, is that why they measure the hands in the combine too? Because I think the whole point was like hand size. There's like some statistic about hand size versus dropped passes or fumbles. So is it like the same thing where it's like hand size correlates to dateability?
I mean, I could see why a man would not want to date a woman with giant hands. I'm not going to elaborate, but I'm just saying that.
If you ever are in the same room as Joe Burrow, you should give him a high five.
I absolutely will.
Yeah, just to compare.
Be like, hey, hand twin.
Yeah, just like secretly compare hand sizes.
Remember the episode of Friends when Joey found his hand twin? Am I the only one that... Meredith, come on. You know what I'm talking about.
I don't remember that one.
They're in Vegas and like he finds that blackjack dealer and he's like, oh my god, it's my hand twin. And like he just follows him around all the time. He's like, we're gonna make millions. That's gonna be me with Joe Burrow if I ever want to know him.
He's your like, hand, hey, hand twin. I hope he has perfectly manicured fingernails the way you do too.
Wow. No, actually, yeah, they're painted right now.
Yeah.
How about that?
So we have to make sure that he has the exact same shade of nail polish that you do.
There you go. I'm about it.
All right. Well, should we get into some Ask Me Anythings? Ask us anything?
Yeah, let's
anything?
Do this. This is a good one.
Okay. You want to kick off?
Sure. Let me see. What do I want to do here? All right, Bree. Since you're being from Youngstown, and this is from at the Insomnia Clee. Being from Youngstown, how did your family settle on the Browns and not the Steelers?
Generation to generation, a family tradition unlike any other. Yeah, my parents were Browns fans, so I grew up a Browns fan. My grandma was a Browns fan, so I truly think it came from the family. But yeah, it's a great question because so many people from Youngstown are actually Steelers fans, being right across the border, because we are technically closer to Pittsburgh than we are Cleveland. Driving distance wise, so there's a lot of people that do cheer for the Steelers, but yeah, we kept it in the family, and now my poor kids are carrying on that tradition as well.
So I have a really weird question, and it's like gonna be the dumbest question ever, but do you have to take toll roads to get to Pittsburgh from Youngstown? Because you have to from Cleveland.
Yes and no, you can. I actually work near Pittsburgh and I go just the regular highway, no tolls, but there is a toll route that you can take as well.
Okay, yeah, that was just like a ridiculous question I had, because like since my grandparents were in Cleveland growing up, like that's, you know, spending my childhood summers here, coming up and visiting. Anytime we would drive from DC to Pittsburgh, DC to Cleveland, we always have to drive through Pittsburgh, and we always had to take Pennsylvania Turnpike, then the Ohio Turnpike,
yeah.
And like had to do all that just to get here. And so, you know, for me, like being in Cleveland, if I wanted to go to Pittsburgh, if I wanted to get there in like a reasonable amount of time, it would have to be toll road.
Yeah, it's annoying. I actually have a funny story though. I don't know if I've shared this on the podcast, growing up with my parents and the Browns, because I was born in the 80s, and that was when the Browns were really good with Bernie Kosar, and their playoff runs, the drive, the fumble, all that stuff happened in that moment of time. And my parents, my sister and I were probably around, I don't know, like 2 and 5 years old. So young. They used to rearrange our entire living room to block my sister and I out of the TV's way. So they would like rearrange the couches every single weekend so that my sister and I couldn't get in front of the TV. It's so, like, they'd put like all of our toys behind the couches and like barricade us from the living room.
Oh my gosh.
Have I shared that before? Because
now
that I have children that are like right around that same age and we're watching games at home on Sunday, I totally understand why they did it. Because every time during the game, my kids are like, Mom, I need this. Mom, I need that. Mom, I'm hungry. I'm like, just shut up and let me watch the game.
So here's what you do. So you start to teach your kids a little bit of the fundamentals about football. And so then that way you can say, okay, when this is happening, you're allowed to ask for a snack. When this is happening, you're not allowed to ask for a snack.
It's actually fair. I'm trying to teach my daughter. We're watching the XFL right now together. And I'm trying to like teach her like the little yellow line on the screen. Like the offense is trying to get the ball to the yellow line on the screen. So I'm trying to like explain to her those concepts. So we'll see. She'll hopefully be able to start grasping that next year.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, because I mean, when I was younger and I was learning, like hockey was the first sport that I learned about, really. And so like I learned about stoppage time, like when the puck is in play, you don't, you know, you don't bother dad. You don't, you know, when we were at the arena, you don't get up to, you know, go to the bathroom or beg for popcorn or whatever. But when the puck is not in play, then you're allowed to ask for your snack or show dad your the picture that you drew of Olaf Kolzig, because that was like the weird child that I was. I have cartoons that I drew of the Caps goalie from the 90s. So, yeah,
I wasn't even allowed to breathe if Ohio State football.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Is that why you're a Notre Dame fan? Is it kind is that you is that you being a rebellious teen is that being a rebellious kind teenager?
I might.
I actually have another like funny story of my son, you know, because he and we'll move on after this. I'm sharing way too much facts, but
no, this is fun. I love this.
Little dude is what I call him. He's four. He loves Baker Mayfield. You guys know that. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. he like learned his numbers kind of by like the jerseys of like the players.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he yeah, so he like knows number six because of Baker Mayfield. And so every time, and he was three at the time, but every time he like saw number six, he would call it Baker Mayfield. So of course, being the great mom that I am, I'm rolling through a McDonald's drive-thru and he is looking at the menu and he was like, "Mom, I want a Baker Mayfield six-piece chicken nugget." And I was like, okay.
That's awesome. The Baker Mayfield Bri, McNuggets.
You are doing this parenting thing all right.
I know. You are like, that's like the shining. You should like be an Instagram mom or something and be like, okay, oh, moms, God. Let me teach you how to mom.
If I ever accidentally get pregnant, I hope I'm half the mother you are.
Oh, you can borrow my kids anytime. Anytime.
All right. I really like this question a lot, and I think it's going to be an easy answer because duh. But Dave Lemond asked us, game seven, down one, 7 seconds left. Which of the three of us is taking the shot?
I'm assuming it's basketball, right?
Yes.
I think the obvious answer is Bree.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I no doubt.
Really?
Bree was like an all-star, okay?
This is a lot of pressure, though. I was the point guard. I was like the one that dished it, though, you know? I'd be really nervous. But I really appreciate that you guys have confidence in me to take the final shot.
I mean, I was on swim team in high school, so I mean, I don't know what I can offer, like, unless we're, like, in the ocean and being chased by sharks. I don't know.
I might be able to alley-oop it up to Brittany, and she can one-handed slam it with her hand size.
All right, that is true. Let's not forget about my giant hands, ladies.
And since Brittany's the tallest, she'll be the slam dunk.
When I was in eighth grade, I played basketball for St. Stephen. That's the school I went to. And we played against St. something in Hubbard. Brie, you know where that is?
Yeah.
Okay, I forget what the school. St. Patrick's, I think?
Yeah, I don't know what school that is.
I think it is. Okay, so we played against them. And we played a whole game, okay? We didn't score a single point.
Oh, no.
Not one in four quarters. Oh, it was like, I think the final score was like 52 to nothing.
Oh, my
God. Like, this is no joke.
That it was, and like, the girl, their point guard, she only had one arm. And I think that, you know, we're in eighth grade and we're all, you know, kind of nervous about that because, well, I don't want to get into it, but like, you know, that was a weird thing for us. And, you know, everyone wanted to play gentler, but, you know.
You also couldn't score. Yeah.
That's me going to elaborate places to make excuses. Like, oh, no, like we were taking it easy. No, we were just terrible.
Oh, my gosh.
I think the last time I played basketball was like just pick them on the playground in elementary school. And like, I've always been the shortest person in the room. So I think I was like just that person that got picked last for being like the little scrawny kid that, you know, obviously couldn't do anything. So they're like, well, we need to have even numbers, so you're gonna go on this team. And then I would just run up and down the court and nobody ever passed me. They all call in Sexton B.
Oh, hey, how dare you.
Shots fired. Well, maybe in our combine workout we can do a shooting drill as well.
Let's just do all of it. It's gonna be a full-on competition.
It's gonna be the survival best day ever
of the fittest.
Can we do a lifting competition? I want to do squats,
smoke
deadlifts, and bench press.
I will lift a donut into my mouth.
Some coffee.
That's my lift.
All right, Brittany, I've got a good one for you.
Mm-hmm.
At Johnny Clee 15 wants to know, what is your father's best slash worst dating advice?
Oh boy. His worst dating advice, he used to say this when I was young. He would sing this song. He was, men don't make passes at girls with big asses.
What?
That's what he used to say when I was a little girl.
Oh my gosh. Is that the best or the worst dating advice?
That's the worst. Okay. The best, and this is serious. This actually, if I could just get serious for a moment. When I was living in North Carolina, I was dating a guy, and I came up to Ohio for a dentist appointment, and I went back down. It was just a quick weekend trip to Ohio. Came back down, and he was gone. So the next day, I emailed my dad. And I was like, Dad, like, what's wrong with me? What am I doing wrong? Blah, blah, blah. And he sent me this long email. And in it, he said, you know, you've spent most of your, like, you know, teens and 20s thinking of marriage as a goal. Okay. And I did. Like, that was, like, a goal of mine. I want to get married. Like, because I had a mom and dad who had been married for so long. They've been married for 35 years now. So I saw this very strong foundation, and I learned a lot about what love is and what it's supposed to look like and what it's supposed to feel like. So, like, to me, that was a goal. But he said, your goals have to be happiness and doing things, you know, with people that you love, and, you know, exploring, like, different career options and just finding happiness that doesn't revolve around someone else. And that was on that piece of advice changed everything for me. From that moment on, I was like, okay, like, I have to, it's my responsibility to rearrange my life so that I'm happy with or without someone. So kudos to Jerry Mollis for that, because that was some really good dating advice.
That is really good advice.
Deep, Jerry. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. See, he's not always a monster, just like 90% of the time. Guys don't make passes at girls with big ass.
I mean,
my dad had a saying, and this is when I definitely, like, got older, like, college age. This is not something he said to me when I was high school age or younger, but when I was getting a little older and more mature, and, you know, college, a little bit after college, if I was, like, going out on a date and it was obvious anytime before I left the house, he would always be like, sweetie, don't forget, condoms and cheap are cheap, children aren't.
Oh,
that's good advice.
That is.
That sticks.
I can, yeah, I can vouch for that.
I've never forgotten that.
Oh, dads.
Girl dads.
Yeah.
Girl dads.
I'm still convinced that my dad would be best friends with Jerry if they ever got to meet. I'm so convinced of that.
All right. I like this question, and this is for both of you guys. This is from at Browns Huddle, and it said, would you rather the Browns go to the next 4 Super Bowls but lose all of them, or not make the playoffs for the next 4 years, average record 5-11, but in their 5th year playoffs in a Super Bowl win?
Oh, that's tough. But, like, you gotta go with the Super Bowl win, right? You gotta suffer a little bit if you're gonna,
you do,
if you know that the end result is a win in the Super Bowl.
See, I was...
But think about how much fun... I'm just going to play devil's advocate here for a second. How much fun did we have when, like, the Cavs were in the playoffs? Whether it was in 2007, you know, on from there, or, you know, back in 2014, 15, that era when LeBron James came. How much fun did we have as Cavs fans just having them be in the playoffs?
Oh my God, it was so nerve-wracking.
Right?
Like, it was so, like, nerve-wracking.
That might have been my favorite time as, like, a Cleveland fan in general. Just, like, the Cavs being in the playoffs. Because if going out anywhere downtown was just such a fun time every time there was a game on. I don't know.
So I'll say
devil's advocate. That's a good question.
I've literally lived them both, because the Washington Capitals were perpetual playoff contenders. Like, I think from, like, 2009 on, with the exception of I think 2013 was the only year they didn't make the playoffs. But from, like, 2009 on, they made the playoffs every single year. They won the President's Trophy multiple years. Like, that's the one where you, like, you have the most season wins. They, like, they've won that trophy multiple years in a row, and we get knocked out in the first round or get knocked out in the second round. And it was crushing every year. And it got to the point where it was like, oh, great, Capitals are in the playoffs again. And it was almost painful because you'd be sitting there with bated breath just waiting for the Penguins to knock them out in the second round and not even make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. And then 2018, when they actually won, I thought I was going to, like, die of happiness, because it was, like, one of the greatest sports moments of my life was seeing my number one sport and my number one team win the Stanley Cup after so many years of heartache and heartbreak. And it's rough. So, and then the Nationals aren't quite the same thing because they weren't always necessarily playoff contenders. And then especially this past year, they weren't even projected to make it into the postseason. Like, they were, you know, up until like May or something, they were like one of the worst teams in baseball. And then they became the best team in baseball all the way through. So it's, I would say that moment from, like, where your team is always in the playoffs and never winning was so much more painful than your team losing every single time. Like, being around the Browns, and then even when I was in Tennessee and being around the Titans, like, no one expected them to win. So there were, like, these low expectations. You were never disappointed. You know, with the Browns, it was the same old Browns. Like, you didn't really expect them to go 500 or more. So it was just one of those things where you went in saying, like, I just want to enjoy my Sunday, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's, for me, I'd almost say I'd prefer the perpetual losing just because it's less heartache than making the playoffs and then losing. But then again, the Capitals and the Nationals, and even you can throw the Washington Mystics in there, like, they all won their prospective championships. And yeah, the moment is, I'm still taking, I mean, Caps are no longer the reigning Stanley Cup champions because that was 2018, but I'm still taking victory laps on that one. So I don't know, like, if it was before the teams made the playoffs, I would say I would rather have the perpetual losing teams. And I think I'm doing a 180 here, but that's fine. But I think now that I've, like, lived the heartache followed by the championship, I'm going for the championship, because it's just like, it's, I mean, and you guys know from 2016 with the Cavs making, so you know what it's like to have your team win a championship. So, I mean, in Cleveland, people are literally living that both themselves, where they had the Cavs win the championship, and then you have the Browns that haven't sniffed the playoffs in years. So you've got that both. So what would, I guess it's like, what would you rather have? Would you rather have the Cavs situation or the Browns situation?
Ooh.
Yee, I know. Neither.
We're the Indians, because, like, they're good, but they never win.
I know. It's like, we're living this. Like, why do we have to decide?
I know.
This is every year.
Usually these types of questions are, like, the hypotheticals. Like, hypothetically, you know, what's blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But this is literally not a hypothetical question, because this is exactly what Cleveland fans are living. And then the making the playoffs and then never winning was the reality of Washington sports fans for years and years and years until 2018. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely take the scenario with the playoffs at the end, but if you're in a scenario where there's no Super Bowl, Stanley Cup, like, that kind of win at the end, it's less painful to have a perpetually losing team than it is to have a team that's perpetually in the playoffs and never winning.
Yeah. I'm taking the Super Bowl.
Yeah. God, could you imagine what this town would look like if when the Browns won the Super Bowl?
No.
Like, oh my goodness. Like, I feel like I'd have to, like, I mean, I'm, like, not quite in downtown Cleveland. I'm close to it, but I feel like I'd have to, like, lock all my windows and doors and hide my cat. Like,
seriously.
All right. Do you guys want one more? I mean, we went pretty long tonight.
Yeah, I think we're done, ladies.
Good?
We're good.
We are done. We had a great show. Another great show this week, and a lot of stuff to talk about. So we'll keep the conversation going on Twitter tomorrow. Looking forward to chatting with you all. Make sure that you continue to listen to us and find us on Apple, on Stitcher, and Spotify. Make sure you rate and review us. 5-star rates. Leave us comments, please. We love interacting, as always. We will post our official results of our hand measurements and hopefully add on to the combine over the next few weeks. So thank you, guys, and talk to you next week.